We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Count it down, boys and girls. 29 minutes from now, we've got two tickets to give away to tonight's Game 2, Warriors and Spurs, which you can catch right here on 95.7 The Game starting at 6 p.m. Mark it down. This isn't a 7:05 tip. It's not a 7:30 tip. It is a 6 p.m. tip. So get organized. Get ready to make that place loud. Get your butts in your seats. Joe, low and dibs, 95.7 The Game. John Morosi coming up in about 4 minutes. The Giants, are they back? Are they back, damn it?
They never went anywhere, Joe.
Was I wrong this whole time?
You were. You were. They're making their playoff push early this year.
I mean, to grab three off the juggernaut Reds and then to take down Brandon McCarthy, who doesn't even know which runners are on base in which situations.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's here we go. Here we go. I will say this, jokes aside, Buster Posey's on a ridiculous tear right now. That's the type of thing you want to see from the leader of an organization. That just when the, I don't want to say hatred because it's certainly not that, but the criticism reaches a peak where people are saying, you know what? Maybe you're not as good as we originally thought. Maybe this team isn't as good as we originally thought. Maybe there are a lot more problems here than meets the eye. He puts it on his back, doesn't say anything, and goes on an unbelievable tear. What's it, 5 jacks in his last 7?
Yep. And third in the league in hitting, batting .375. Just a ridiculous clip.
Yep. Amazing.
Right now, he's on a tear. That's exactly what leaders do in tight spots to try to motivate the rest of the team. John Morosi in about 2 minutes, but for right now, here's Dibs with your update.
And the Warriors look to go up 2-0. That's our top story. They're trying to hold home court advantage tonight in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals at Oracle Arena. Superstar Kawhi Leonard likely out with a left ankle that he first sprained in the Houston series, then hurt it again when he stepped on David Lee's foot. And, of course, the big attention paid to when Zaza undercut him after a jump shot. Greg Popovich, very critical of Zaza, calling him a dirty player. This is Zaza's response.
There are things I can't control. There are things I can't control. I can't control whatever anybody says, right? I can't control whatever I'm telling you guys, that's what happened. And that's how I feel about it, that I feel bad about it.
He feels bad, and he feels like he needs to contribute tonight in Game 2. Papa and Bonte go live from Oracle at noon. Warriors warm up at 4:30, and then tip time, as Joe mentioned, 6 o'clock, right here exclusively on 95.7 The Game. Story number 2, Giants make it 4 straight. They beat the Dodgers 8-4. Matt Cain picked up his 3rd win of the year. Buster Posey, homer number 7. Game 2 in the series is tonight. Ty Block going up against Rich Hill, who's coming off the DL after having blister issues. Story number 3, Sean Manaea back on the bump for the A's, struggling to find the zone.
And here comes the 3-1 pitch. It's on the way, and that's way inside. That's ball 4. It's 2-0. Wow.
Manaea walked in a couple of runs in the first. Only gave up 2 hits, but he did yield 4 runs. The A's lose 6-5 to Seattle. Game 2 in that series is tonight. Andrew Triggs for Oakland going up against Chase DeJong. 7:10 on our sister station, KFOX 98.5. That's your update. I'm Dan Dibley on your home for Golden State Warriors Western Conference Final Playoff Basketball tonight. 6 o'clock tip on 95.7 The Game.
Tone it down a bit.
All right, I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. Great update. I got a question. We're going to jump to John Morosi in just a bit, but I got a question. Listening to Zaza have to defend himself over and over again. Am I supposed to feel bad that Kawhi Leonard got hurt? Now, hear me out on this. Am I supposed to feel bad he got hurt? Professional sports has tipped its hand. Anyone remember Bountygate? That was a team letting you know flat out that they were intentionally trying to injure the competition. In hockey, you have blatant fighting, slashing. Baseball, you have guys throwing juice at another guy's head in situations. And in hoops, we have guys stepping into that landing zone. So in reality, have we reached a point where we should feel bad when dudes get hurt? Because I know there's that human side of the entire equation where you sit there, man, you never want to see anyone get hurt. But do the guys playing care that someone else gets hurt?
I think so. I think professionally you care, but when the ball goes up tonight in game two, you're not going to think, oh, I'm going to miss this jumper because I feel bad about the fact that Kawhi Leonard's hurt. Zaza feels bad that Kawhi got hurt, and I'm sure he feels bad that this happened. Unless he is truly an out-and-out nefarious dirty player, which I don't believe he is. So you can feel both things, Joe. You can feel bad that a guy got hurt, but still have that killer instinct and go for the jugular.
What matters more, the opponent's health or you winning?
You winning. But that doesn't mean you can't feel bad. You can have both feelings.
You can.
And I do.
John Morosi, a dynamite MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. He's joining Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, help me out here. Every time you come on, we talk baseball. It's always a great conversation, a riveting conversation. And yet now today I find out you're in Nashville covering the Western Conference Finals for the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes, I am. So one of the many great things for me about working for MLB Network is the ability to, on occasion, go to my other co-favorite number one sport, which is hockey. So it has been a phenomenal trip so far in terms of covering this series. First two games at Anaheim were very good. Now we're here in Nashville, where I've been told, gentlemen, that the atmosphere, the intensity is what I was been told just the last couple of days, the best of any in the National Hockey League right now.
What about the food? Lo Neal played there for years. He was an integral part of the Music City Miracle. He says the food and the nightlife in Nashville, surprisingly top-notch.
I will tell you this. I did not have a chance to experience the nightlife last night, I promise. But what I did do is I did have some of the food, which is outstanding. And here's what I'll tell you about Nashville, is that it's really acquiring this reputation as being one of the better places in the league to come, I think, for a visiting player. It's also now becoming a place where, and again, as Lo knows, this is a really appealing place to raise a family. So I think now this is a big part of the way the Predators have built their organization. They now have players that want to play here for their career, then stay here, raise their family afterward. And then that really adds to the overall instruction for the youth levels of hockey here. So it's actually a really exciting story for the NHL. On top of course, earlier in the year, you've got Austin Matthews with his revival coming in there with the Toronto Maple Leafs from Scottsdale, Arizona. So I think you're just seeing the game growing in these non-traditional places, which is great. And of course, we saw it last year in the Bay Area with the Sharks being in the Cup Finals. So exciting times for my other favorite sport. But yes, Nashville, with my brother living here, it is a phenomenal place. I always love coming here. So this is a place that no one ever has to explain to me any reason to come here. I know intrinsically it's one of the best places in America to be right now.
John Morosi with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. All right, we're going to pivot into some baseball here. The Giants have won four in a row, three versus the Reds. They beat the Dodgers last night. Buster Posey is on a hitting tear. The starting pitching, anchored by Matt Cain, of all people, has dramatically turned around since the injury to Madison Bumgarner. What are we supposed to think of these San Francisco Giants at this point in the season? Are they still a playoff contender? Are they as bad as we thought? Was that just an aberration? How do you analyze this team at the moment?
Well, the way I look at it is this. They have to play still exceptionally well to just get to the spot where they could be even holding at the deadline. I really think you look at the way the standings look, the way the Rockies have played recently, the Dodgers, of course, you're talking about Rich Hill coming back. That's a huge start for them to see how he's going to be able to handle that blister, if he's going to be able to remain in the rotation. But for me, we have seen other teams in that division have, I think, collectively from the beginning of the season to now, greater staying power in that division. So I would say the Giants still have to prove to me they have to go on a really sustained run of winning. They've got to win, I believe, consistently, probably 6 out of 10 games, 7 out of 10 games for the next month or so to get to the spot where we're thinking of them again as a legitimate contender, because that National League West, guys, is better than I thought it was going to be. Even the D-backs, I think, are a more quality ball club than we were expected to be when the season began. So, again, I would say we need to see some more from them, but encouraging that at least there's no thought of dismantling the team right now. You have to wait at least another month or so, maybe 6 weeks. But certainly with Pence's injury, that's certainly a tough thing for them to overcome as well.
Certainly, you can appreciate the Giants' pitching performances from Matt Cain in particular. How surprised are you, John, with the way he's bounced back after three or four really down years in a row due partly to injury.
Yeah, it's really a great story. And listen, Matt Cain has the respect of everybody in that Giants locker room, and I certainly think around the game as well for what he's accomplished, the perfect game, and obviously the three World Series titles. But for me, Cain's the guy that his stuff was always so good, and then he had to figure out a way to pitch more with what he has left. And I think that it's really a period of time that it's taken for him, again, as you point out, really two or three years to adapt, to readapt to the new reality of what he's got as a pitcher. So I think for Matt Cain, for his ability to figure out a way to get it done, rely more on movement than velocity, is really a tribute to him. I'm sure that the Giants behind the scenes, Dave Righetti and all the great people there, they've really worked a lot with him to make sure that they find a way for him to do that. So, again, I give Matt Cain first and foremost the credit, but also Bruce Bochy for hanging with him. You know, it was a very tough decision, I think, at the end of spring training, what they were going to do with that fifth spot, and it was unpopular in many quarters for him to stay with Matt Cain as the starter there. But, again, Bruce Bochy, more often than not, and we, certainly there are times when maybe Giants fans will say, well, listen, maybe Bochy's loyalty to players has caused the Giants to maybe lose a game here and there. But I think by and large, on measure, his trust in veteran players has been one of the guiding forces behind what has been, as you guys all know, the best team in the major leagues this decade.
Couldn't agree with you more. Tell your brother, I think that Brentwood area is pretty cool, too, in Nashville. No, you probably
beautiful.
Think, oh, my God, it's definitely gorgeous there. When you talk about a team like the A's across the Bay, what do you think about that team and young and upcoming team, the pitching rotation? And is this team, you think, poised to make a run or end up at 500 this year?
Well, here's the interesting thing about the American League right now. I would tell you that the American League wild card race, outside of those teams in the American League East, with what looks like could be a three playoff team division with Baltimore and New York and Boston, the rest of it's really wide open. I think Houston is clearly the class of the American League West. They're probably the best team in baseball right now, both in record and also on the field. And the Central is really mediocre. I think Cleveland's eventually going to win that division, but they have not really played up to their level so far this year. So when you look at that landscape, you look at it and say, you know what? Maybe there's a way for the A's to be a wild card contender because of the different dynamics that you see in the American League right now. And I would tell you as well, a great story has been Yonder Alonso. With what he has done this year, the production he has had, it's just a matter, I think, of him finally now maybe trusting and evolving more his lower half. I was told by someone close to me, really, that was a big focus for him this past offseason, was really kind of settling into his lower half more and finding a way to really kind of involve that lower half in his swing, because it's been actually pretty interesting to watch. And, of course, as you guys all well know, a very, very successful baseball family, of course, being the brother-in-law of Manny Machado. So there's a lot of hits. When they get together for Thanksgiving and Christmas, there's a lot of hits at that table.
John Morosi, MLB insider for both Fox Sports and MLB Network with Jolo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, more impressive to you, Derek Jeter's on-field career or Derek Jeter's dating career?
I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that in its entirety. What I will tell you.
Don't
is
you
this.
Dare straddle the fence on this one.
What I will tell you is this. Derek Jeter has been an American icon on and off the field. Is that a suitable answer?
Damn right it is.
There you go. He's, to me, again, when you think about New York, and again, we talked about certainly with Derek Jeter night on Sunday, he is a guy that's been under the microscope for so long. He was under the absolute intense focus of the New York media, of the national media. He was the rare baseball player in this day and age who became a crossover star from a marketing standpoint, and you never saw his name in the headlines for the wrong reasons. And I think that is such an exceptional thing to say about someone, and certainly a credit goes to his parents, who are phenomenal, and his family background. But to me, that just says a lot about who he has been, who he is now as a person and as a player. He always said the right thing. He always did the right thing. And that's where in sports, every now and then, a sport is really blessed with a player that understands the total package, that they understand that the total responsibilities and demands of him on and off the field. And Jeter has been that for baseball. And now I think that's why it's such an interesting conversation about, we talk about who the next Jeter is going to be, who the next face of baseball is going to be. A lot of things lined up for him. He was in New York. He won immediately. He was in the playoffs every single year. And he got it. He totally got the whole picture of being a superstar there. So I give him a phenomenal amount of credit and certainly wish him very well in his retirement.
Follow him on Twitter at John Morosi, MLB insider for both Fox Sports and MLB Network. John Morosi with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, as always, it was a pleasure. Thank you for your insight. Enjoy Nashville. We'll catch up again with you soon.
Yeah, I can't wait, guys. I'll give you the full report. But, yes, Brentwood is outstanding. You guys have a very good scouting report on Nashville as well. But, again, I have to if I want to try to study up on my second sport and cover it responsibly, I may have to only barely, guys, understand some of those nightlife on Broadway here. But I do have a vague conception of what's going on. So hopefully that carries me through.
Well, enjoy it. Those are two very fun Thanks. Teams to watch. It's going to be a hell of a series.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much. Can't wait. Thank you.
Derek Jeter said in his speech when he was getting his number retired that he wouldn't trade his life for anyone on the planet. I'd trade for his.
Yeah, seriously.
I'd trade for his right now. It's like he says that as if it's some bold statement. I banged them all. I'm a Hall of Famer. 3,500 hits. New York City.
Hot take.
I'm not gonna. You know what? I wouldn't trade with anyone. Who would you trade with at that point? Who did it better? Anyone? You want to throw it out there?
He's pretty amazing. He's pretty amazing.
Like, think about it. Does anyone have anybody else they could throw out there? Would you rather be Brad Pitt? Probably not. He looks good.
A lot of mouths to feed. A
lot going on there. Yeah. In the news for all the wrong reasons.
College tuition's going to break him. You watch.
Let's run it down.
Keep making those movies.
Hannah Davis, Minka Kelly, Jessica Biel.
That's a pass.
Adriana Lima.
No, thank you.
Jessica Alba.
Gross.
Scarlett Johansson.
Ugh,
Vanessa Minnillo.
No.
Jordana Brewster.
Overrated.
Joy Enriquez.
Eyes too big.
Lara Dutta. I'm not sure I know who that one is. Mariah Carey.
Wow, there's
Bridget
one.
Hall.
Sang D all night long.
Rachel Yucatel. That was the Tiger Woods one. Could have gone ahead and left her off the list. even Jeter goes slumming, I take it. Not again.
Someone's got to hit ninth God. For Jeets.
Yeah, I mean, someone's got to come off the bench Michael Moore style and make a play late. And as you can tell, good for her.
Wow.
Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Sorry, Dibs, was that a little too blue for you?
No, it was great. I liked it, actually. I laughed, I cried.
Let's bring it back in. You know what? Let's hit this, because we got Rick Barry coming up in about 12 minutes, and then we've got Warriors tickets to give away in that same segment. Tonight, clear the schedule, 6 p.m., game two. The Seattle Seahawks, according to Michael Silver, are interested in signing Colin Kaepernick. They need a backup. Trayvon Boykin out of TCU, their current backup, has been arrested twice this offseason. He's also thrown less than 20 career NFL passes. So the Seahawks are thinking, we need to upgrade the backup quarterback position. The rumor is that Cap and RG3 are in contention for the job. The Seahawks reached out to Colin Kaepernick's agent last Friday to start the discussions. How do you feel about the landing spot, Lowe? Do you see it going down?
I don't see it going down, but I see that's a place you're talking about, a backup. You know that you're going to be a backup because Russell Wilson's not giving that up. They just gave him a huge contract. But it's a place that he's going to get some, probably a little bit of burn. You can use him in certain situations. It's a great place. They got a team that's always seemed to be able to compete. But I don't see that as a possible. I see it possible as a landing place, but I don't see it happening.
So no would be your answer?
Yes.
Why would be the no?
I think Colin's going to end up in a different place. I think the biggest no is, I don't think that Seattle's really going to, I don't think they're going to pull the trigger. I think they're kicking around the tires. I just don't think that he fits that system.
They literally said he fits the system better than anyone else out there. That was the quote from John Schneider. He was talking about how this is exactly what they have. Peter King was talking about it as well. Russell Wilson behind a bad offensive line, and this is one of the worst offensive lines in the business, sixth in sacks allowed last year with Russell Wilson. Imagine giving up 42 sacks with the most elusive quarterback in the NFL. Think about that. The Niners, they were third in sacks allowed last season with 47. Kaepernick knows what it's like to scramble. You need a quarterback who can get around. The Seahawks feel that he fits the system better than anybody. What I'm trying to figure out is why this wouldn't work.
I think that, honestly, I really believe that there's other teams like Minnesota that can bring Colin in, and he would be better suited for them because of the fact they are going to need him. Russell Wilson, I think, is pretty durable. I think if you look at Minnesota, this is a team that really doesn't necessarily believe in this quarterback. I don't think that he's going to be upright the whole year. He's injury prone. I think if Colin wants the best opportunity to play this year, I'm picking up the phone and tell my agent, make it happen in Minnesota.
But if Minnesota's not calling, if this is literally the only team that calls, you still don't think Seattle's interested?
Then I would go then. I think then I would go. If he has no other job, no other opportunity.
Well, here we are mid-May. This is the only team we've heard. We've heard one team has made a phone call. One. So.
To play in the league. If he says he wants to play in the league, this is the only opportunity. You got to take it, Dibs.
Dibs, what do you see happening here? They're looking at Robert Griffin III. They're looking at Colin Kaepernick. Clearly, there's an interest in Seattle to upgrade the backup quarterback position. They have no depth there. Russell Wilson took a pounding last year, and that's eventually going to catch up with them. They view themselves as a team that only has a small window left to try to capitalize on what they've got. They might need someone to hold it down for two or three games to keep them in playoff contention. Would Cap be your choice over Robert Griffin III?
Yes, if I had to make that choice. And if I was the GM of Seattle, I would make the choice to take Colin Kaepernick over RG3. I think the injury factor with RG3 is much higher, even though Colin Kaepernick has had some injuries. He had the shoulder problem. He lost a bunch of weight. Reports are that he's gained most of that weight back. He's back fit and strong. Personally, I don't think that he'll be successful in Seattle. I don't think he'll be successful as a quarterback again anywhere. But if you're the Seahawks and your backup has legal trouble and you're getting into desperation mode, as you mentioned, it's mid-May. You're closing in on the start of camp here in about 2 months, 2.5 months. You need to get somebody in there. If this is your best option, you may want to make the move.
Wouldn't this make a lot of sense from his perspective where you've reached a point now where in mid-May, one of 32 teams has expressed an interest publicly. One team. So wouldn't it make sense that if you wanted to continue your career, maybe make something work with this team if they're interested and you can reach terms, and then just chill for a year? You're in Seattle. It's not a city that's going to come after you for your political views. And that's one of a few cities. You've got to eliminate a lot of cities from the equation. Houston ain't calling. Dallas ain't calling. That state is not interested in what Colin Kaepernick brings to the table on or off the field. So your pool of teams that might want you involved, very, very limited.
Yeah.
So if you sign in Seattle, you might not have to play it down. But what you need afterwards is Pete Carroll saying, been the consummate pro. He shows up every day. He works hard. He studies. He's a leader. He's a veteran. He's everything you'd want in a guy in the locker room. That's the type of thing that makes a headline and helps next year when new vacancies open up towards getting a job. Maybe the starting job isn't out there for him.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I was thinking about Denver, too, when you were talking about political markets, and I don't think that Denver is a fit either. It's a place that, even though socially they're allowing marijuana and other things, but politically they lean in the other direction, very patriotic and more in the right-wing leanings.
But I was shocked about Denver. I thought that Denver would come calling.
I did, too, Lo.
I really thought that they would come back and say, you know what, give him a small deal, $4 or $5 million. Hey, here's a guy. Prank incentive base. They tried to trade for him last year. I thought that'd be a team. I look at Buffalo, new management now, new GM. You're talking about the quarterback they have there is not going to be the future. So go to a place where you seem like you have a little bit more opportunity, but these teams aren't calling.
If it's Buffalo, you've got new management and new head coach. Do you want to take that risk? Do you
it's
want your first
place,
pre-
though, like you're saying.
But do you want your first premier signing, your first notable signing to be the most controversial player in the NFL right now? Like, that would be the type of thing where if you're McDermott or you're Bean is the last name of the new GM,
right.
That's the question you're answering your first 20 days in office. Like, that's what you have to deal with.
Yeah. No, thanks.
That's something you might want to be careful with. I'm just thinking politically. That's how these coaches a lot of times think. You make the moves that'll keep you in play. Keep the seat, as some of them say in the industry. Denver, by signing him, wouldn't that be throwing in the towel on Paxton Lynch? At some point, you have to acknowledge you drafted a quarterback in the first round and you can't play him.
No, I think that here's what I don't think it'll be throwing in the towel. I think it just says, this is the year. You do a one-year deal for the guy, an incentive base. Let Colin run the show for just a year because he can make him better. And then you still have those rookie quarterbacks. I mean, the guy be a second or third-year player at the time.
Hall of Fame segment coming up next. Hall of Famer Rick Barry and two tickets to give away to tonight's Game 2. You don't want to miss it. Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
He's a Hall of Famer, an 8-time All-Star, an NBA champion. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick24Barry, and also be sure to check out the website, RickBarry24.com. Guess what? It's Rick Barry with Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Rick, the talk of the town locally, nationally, when they weigh in on the NBA Western Conference Finals, Zaza Pachulia and Kawhi Leonard in Game 1. Did you think what Kawhi sustained there, what Zaza did to him by stepping into his space, was a dirty play?
Everybody has their opinion about it. Didn't look like to me did it intentionally, but that's what I saw. But it's just one of those unfortunate things that happened. I can understand why Greg Popovich is upset, but those things kind of happen in the game, and it's really tough for San Antonio to lose a guy of his stature and how important he is to that team. It certainly is going to enhance the Warriors' chances of going on to win. I think they would have been able to possibly do that even if Kawhi was around, but we'll never know now, will we? Because he's not going to play in this game, and I think the chances of him coming back and being a factor and playing at the level that he played prior to his injury in the last series, and the reoccurrence of it here is probably pretty remote.
Rick, do you think the league needs to take additional steps to make this a flagrant foul or look at it upon review or even fine or suspend players for going underneath a jump shooter?
Yeah, I think so. But it wasn't as if he was there guarding him. He went up for the shot and he turned and stepped around and stepped back into him where he was coming down. He was running at him. So I think if you look at it, it wasn't the type of play that everybody was up in arms about years ago when guys would be guarding a guy. He'd go up for a shot and they turn and step back into the area where he was coming. Now, that's a very dangerous play. If you look at the replay, that wasn't the case. He was trying to run over to him and he was still far away from him, taking a step forward. In fact, one of the plays, you can see it very, there was a still picture I saw. You could see it. I mean, he wasn't guarding him right in front of him and turned and tried to screen him off by stepping into his space. That wasn't how it happened.
Rick, in your opinion, do you think it's because where there's smoke, there's fire? So it's perception versus reality. If you look at Zaza with him, I think, hurting KD and the different things that's gone on in his process of his career, that's why people look at this guy as potentially, you know, being a dirty player because of certain things that's happened in his past?
Obviously. I mean, look at Draymond Green is the same way. I mean, why do you think he got suspended?
Sure.
In that game. I mean, because of incidences that have taken place. So Draymond's under the same microscope looking at that. I mean, in Draymond, I don't think should have been. First of all, there should have never been a suspension for him last year because the officials have blown their whistles like they rarely do. They let guys beat the hell out of each other in the playoffs, which has always been my biggest pet peeve. And it goes on so many times they call tack foul somewhere and then they maul somebody and they don't blow their whistle. You know, if they had blown their whistle like they should have, LeBron James should have been called for a flagrant foul when he took Draymond and threw him to the court and stepped over him. If the whistle had blown and the flagrant foul was called, Draymond never gets suspended because he never responds and reacts the way he did.
Rick Barry, the Hall of Famer, with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Now, Greg Popovich, who's usually quite brief with his halftime interviews, but very calculating with his verbiage, yesterday was quite outspoken in regards to what happened to Kawhi Leonard. Do you think some of that could have been gamesmanship to try to get some of the calls on his side for tonight's game too?
Who knows? Only Greg knows. I mean, Greg is very unusual the way he approaches interviews and things and says the things he does. There's always calculation behind it. But I understand why he's upset. My God, he lost his key player, his best player, and then he just got done having Tony Parker, who was playing his best basketball in the playoffs for years, and loses him. I mean, you know, the guy has to be, you know, extremely disappointed with that. And again, I think it comes back to the fact that even he brought it up. Well, remember what had happened when he grabbed someone's arm when he was with Dallas, when he grabbed Kawhi's arm or whoever it was. I mean, it's the same situation is that you just brought up. This is a guy who has the reputation of having done things in the past that were questionable. And so, yeah, you've got some reason to bring it up. But, you know, to not be upset over losing a guy like that, it would probably be not human to be, you know, to not be upset about that. And he has his right to speak his piece, and he did it. It's not going to change things. They have to play without Kawhi in this game. And heaven only knows if he's going to be ready for game number 3 back in San Antonio.
Well, fortunately for the Spurs, that game's not until Saturday. Klay Thompson, Rick, has been struggling by my eye in the postseason on the offensive end. What's the reason for this?
Very simple. First of all, he's pushing and rushing a little bit. They're playing him tough defense. He's not utilizing screens, and they should set some more screen, have a guy be in a position that he can use his teammate as a screener. He's not – the ball's not the way it should be delivered to him. He's taking ill-advised shots. He's taking shots where he's off balance. It could be very simple to straighten it out. All they have to do is go through it, and they can correct it right away. I mean, here's the big thing. I just saw a big story at World. USA Today talk about, oh, this guy's a great screener. And you know what? This is such a crock. Why? I wish people would explain this so fans could really, truly understand. The key person to make a screen work is not the guy who's the screener. The guy is not a screener until a man runs into him. It is the responsibility of his teammate, the guy that's being guarded, to set his man up properly and run him into that guy. What's critical for the guy who becomes the screener is to put himself in an advantageous or in a proper position so his teammate can then utilize him effectively. That's not happening with Clay right now. And they need to work on that. And that can be worked on very simply in one practice. And then you utilize it. And then the other thing is the ball has to be delivered properly. The ball should be on its way to a man coming off a screen if he uses it properly, so that the moment he steps past the screen, the first step, the ball is already there. You can't wait till he comes off the screen and throw it, because that gives the defender a chance to fight around and create a problem. If the ball is delivered as he comes off that screen, Clay is such a quick shooter, he'll be able to go up and shoot an uncontested shot. He makes a couple of those, and it's all over. He's not doing that right now. Plus the fact he's really off balance taking shots. He's taking ill-advised shots, and he's pressing a little bit right now. So they need to work on that. Get the screens in the proper position. He utilizes it properly. Deliver the ball properly. Have him make a couple of those, and then when Clay gets going, it doesn't matter what he does, whether he's off balance, whether he's – I mean, they go in. We've seen him do that on many occasions. So he just needs to focus on that one aspect, get himself some good, clean, open looks, and he'll be fine.
Warriors got off to a slow start last game. You saw the way that they sputtered and didn't get it going to the third quarter. What can you expect tonight, and how do you see this rest of this series panning out?
Well, you know, they recovered. I'm sure Mike Brown talked to him, and that's the one thing with him on the bench right now. He's emphasizing that they have to play defense if they expect to win, and they did that in the third quarter. The offense got going, and they're capable of exploding and getting 10, 15, 20 points before you can hardly blink an eye. But it comes with the defense. You got to play defense in order to be able to make that happen. So if they just focus on the defense, the offense will take care of itself. You want your defense to initiate your offense. You don't want to try to force things offensively. Good defense will do that for you. You get steals. You get breakaways. You control the defensive boards, and you get fast break opportunities. And then take care of the basketball and just take not ill-advised shots. Take good shots and play Warriors type of basketball where it's not one-on-one, where your guys are moving the ball, passing it, cutting it, having games where when they had 38 baskets, 33 of them were on, you know, assists or something, some insane number. I mean, that's Warriors basketball. When they play that way, they're basically indefensible. And so I would assume that they had a little bit of a lesson there, and they got away with getting a victory in a game that they could have easily have lost. And so I don't think they'll make the same mistake the rest of this series or the rest of the playoffs.
Hall of Famer, 8-time All-Star, NBA champ. Follow him on Twitter at Rick24Barry. Check out the website, rickbarry24.com. It's Rick Barry with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Rick, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. We look forward to catching up again soon.
No problem. Go Warriors.
Absolutely. Tip time tonight, 6 p.m., right here on 95.7 The Game. Coverage begins very early. Very early. Papa and Bonte are going to be at the Crown Royal Club inside Oracle from 12 to 3. Townie and Steinmetz will be outside Oracle from 3 to 4:30. Warriors warm-up from 4:30 to 5:30 with Steinmetz and Kerry Keating. And like I said, the game starts at 6. I almost feel like we were supposed to do something else in this segment. Oh, that's right. Tickets, 2, to give away to tonight's game. Caller 40, 888-957-9570. 40 points Steph Curry dropped in Game 1 against San Antonio in the victory. Caller 40 in honor of Steph Curry. 888-957-9570. You'll have 2 tickets to tonight's Game 2 Western Conference Finals, Spurs at Warriors. Pop's comments, Zaza Pachulia, Kawhi Leonard, your calls next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Chris Broussard, NBA analyst for Fox Sports 1, set to join us in about 20 minutes at 9:05. Jerry Hairston Jr., World Series champ, at 9:30. Welcome back. Joe, Lo, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Game 2, Warriors-Spurs tonight, 6 p.m., 6 p.m., right here on 95.7 The Game. We're going to jump into Greg Popovich's comments, inflammatory comments, about your Zaza Pachulia in just a moment. But we've got a couple tickets to give away to the Evolve World Tour featuring Imagine Dragons with Group Love and Kay Flay at Shoreline Amphitheater on Tuesday, October 3rd. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. at LiveNation.com. Presale kicks off Thursday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at LiveNation.com using the code TRIPLE. The code is TRIPLE. Trivia question. 888-957-9570. First one to get it right wins the tickets. How many bench points did the Washington Wizards score in last night's 115-105 Game 7 loss to the Boston Celtics? How many bench points did the Washington Wizards score in last night's 115-105 Game 7 loss to the Boston Celtics? That's Washington's problem. And Boston's problem is quickly about to become LeBron James. The Warriors, on the other hand, have no problems. They have a Game 1 victory in the books. They have a one-game series lead. They are 7 victories away from their second title in 3 years. But based on what transpired in Game 1, most notably the loss of Kawhi Leonard to a sprained ankle, Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs met with the media yesterday and decided to speak up on the matter. Here's what Pop had to say.
Pop, how much more difficult is it without him, obviously, against a team like Golden State, man, as opposed to...
How much more difficult is it?
I mean,
how would it be if Curry didn't play? How much more difficult would that be? I'm not a happy camper, but that's a silly question. A two-step lead with your foot closeout is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. You can go back and look in Dallas games where he got a flagrant 2 for elbowing Patty Mills, the play where he took Kawhi down and locked his arm in Dallas and could have broken his arm. Ask David West, his current teammate, how things went when Zaza was playing for Dallas and he and David got into it. And then think about the history he's had and what that means to a team. What happened last night? A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not.
That's Greg Popovich yesterday on what happened in Game 1. Now, Jeff Van Gundy, former Knick coach, former Rocket coach, current ABC ESPN color analyst, joined us at 7:30 this morning. We asked him if he thought it was a dirty play. Here's what Van Gundy had to say.
I never try to say dirty or not, because to me that implies that I know what his intent was, and I don't know what Pachulia's intent was. But it certainly was a dangerous play. It was a reckless play. And it's happening more and more frequently in our game today, and the NBA needs to legislate it out of the game. To me, it's a flagrant foul. In this case, because it led to an injury of another player, it should have led to an ejection.
As we step outside the Bay Area bubble over the last 2 days, it's not a clean sweep for, oh, it was just a good basketball play, no intent to injure in that situation. In fact, the opinion across the country is quite varied. That's why it's such a popular topic at the moment. Lo, 2 days after this has happened, we came on yesterday. Most of us felt this wasn't intentional. This wasn't a dirty play. But we've had the opportunity now to speak with Van Gundy, to hear from Popovich, to hear from multiple NBA insiders around the country. Where do you stand on the situation now?
Yeah, Joe, my opinion has changed slightly. I was one of the guys that came on yesterday and said that it wasn't a dirty play and there was no intent or there, and it shouldn't have been maybe a flagrant. And then, you know, I listened to Pop and watched him and listened to what his analogies was, and you thought about what he was trying to, you know, portray to the listeners and the people around. And it makes you say, okay, take a guy, for instance, Draymond Green. People can say what they want. Draymond is a physical player. He is the glue of the Warriors team. He's the glue. He's the engine that makes it run. And when he goes, the team goes. But he's been known to get some flagrants and get in officials' faces and all the different things that happen. And Draymond's that guy that plays with his emotions on his sleeve. So at times, it appears that sometimes Draymond shouldn't have mourned a technical or flagrant, but he gets it because it's Draymond. Because there is a past, there is a track record. So those things sometimes aren't warranted, but it happens. And then when you look at Zaza, if you think about what happened with Patty Mills, and you think about Kawhi, not just the closeout, not the closeout, because sometimes those things happen, and it goes on in the NBA. I get it. But you saw what he did to Kawhi when they played before, where he twisted his arm, got him in the chicken wing, and tried to, during there, break his arm. That had nothing to do with trying to get the ball. That was a dirty play. So I think that sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And I think sometimes when players or athletes or anyone has a track record of doing certain things, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And people just assume because of the track record, now they say this person is dirty. So when you look at it like that, and think about his track record, you say, hey, I can see what Popovich is saying.
All right, so 2 days later, Lowe has a different opinion than what he originally thought. Dibs, has your opinion been swayed at all based on the last 2 days worth of replays, analysis, and information that's come out from NBA insiders around the league?
No, in fact, my heels are even more dug in after we talked to Jeff Van Gundy about the whole idea of a flagrant being issued or a suspension or an ejection. This is a guy who had previous ankle injuries, have somebody come underneath him on a jump shot. There's nothing more sinister than that. Zaza closes out. His feet get too close to where Kawhi is going to land. Kawhi lands on him, and the rest is history. I don't think it was a dirty play. I've seen many a dirty play in basketball over my 40-plus years of watching the game, and that in real time, upon replay, upon reflection, doesn't feel to me like a dirty play. It's obviously very unfortunate for San Antonio to lose their best player, and it sucks for those people enjoying high entertainment value from this series because Kawhi was looking like the best player in the world over the past week, but he's going to be out tonight. Hopefully he comes back on Saturday. The fact that he got hurt, to me, doesn't make it a dirty play.
I think it's fair to say that Greg Popovich is one of the best coaches in NBA history. I think across the four sports right now, you'd probably rank him in the top five of all active professional sports coaches at the moment. Part of the reason for that isn't just the success. It's the intelligence. Popovich is a smart man. He is a well-spoken man, and he chooses his words very carefully. You notice that before game one, he was outspoken once again on the current president. Not the first time he's spoken out on politics. He's weighed in on a variety of topics, but he picks and chooses his spots because he wants to maximize the effect of the words he uses. Smart, intelligent, cunning. Look no further than virtually every halftime interview he has ever done with any sideline reporter. David Aldridge, Doris Burke, the late, great Craig Sager. All those interviews, the same thing holds true. Pop is always short, curt, sometimes perceived as rude. He doesn't want to give anything up. He's not going to give you much, right? He's not going to give you much. He can come off as condescending. Now, a lot of people find it entertaining. I find it entertaining in most situations, but he doesn't say a whole lot. So ask yourself, when you listen to what that he said in that interview yesterday, why is he suddenly so outspoken? Why is he giving such a great soundbite? What is it about this situation that's different from any other time he's asked some mundane NBA question? What do you need to do differently in the second half? Clearly, he had something to say on this matter. Now, one could argue he wants to see the game changed. He doesn't like what happened to Kawhi Leonard. But if that was the case, to maximize the impact, why were you so quiet when Bruce Bowen used to do this on your own team? It seemed to help you back then. Why is it that 2 minutes later, when your own LaMarcus Aldridge jumped into Steph Curry's space and tried the exact same play, you didn't mention that in your interview yesterday? See, if you want to maximize effect and change the game, there'd be no better way to do it than to grab a headline, Popovich calls out his own player for trying to injure another player. That would be news, but he didn't want to bring that up. He didn't want to talk about how 2 minutes later, Aldridge tried the same thing for Steph Curry. A lot of people don't want to talk about that because Steph Curry didn't get hurt. It's not a news story. So now you'd have to ask yourself, why is it, if he's not trying to change the game, he's so elaborate in his answer? The answer is this. Tonight is game two, and he's politicking the refs. This is gamesmanship, pure and simple. Now, Van Gundy came on earlier and discredited that and said, it's not gamesmanship, the series is over. Not that Popovich is not. He's not mailing it in. He didn't have Kawhi Leonard against Houston was able to win, and that's a vastly different story. I get it, but this isn't a guy who's going to quit. He's politicking the refs tonight in the hopes of getting a couple calls to go his way. Because if you're this outspoken, maybe, just maybe, the refs who are human can be influenced. Dibs, can you see something like that taking place?
I could see the thinking behind it, but the influence is not going to happen. These guys tonight are not going to officiate thinking, all right, guys, let's remember what Popovich said. We heard it on Jolo and Dibs, that minute-long cut. Let's make sure that we over-legislate every single thing. These guys are going to go out and ref the game as they see fit. There'll be calls maybe that they're looking at more closely, like plays when somebody goes underneath a jump shooter. But I don't think you're necessarily going to see a couple of quick fouls on Zaza or Draymond as retribution.
But you don't think there's any way whatsoever that the refs could get together and be like, you know what? Maybe we need to keep an eye on Pachulia. Perhaps it wasn't a dirty play in game one, but maybe we should watch Pachulia stepping into other guys' space tonight.
I think they do that with every series. They have scouting reports on players. You know, Draymond Green, I'm sure they know about Draymond and his willingness to criticize officials and talk about calls throughout the game. So I'm sure they talk about this. They game plan as officials. They have their pregame meeting and they go over things. But I don't think they're going to take Popovich's words and think, all right, we got to make sure we give Pop a couple calls to balance this thing out.
Yeah, but it couldn't be subconscious. It couldn't be a situation where officiating was just put on blast. None of them are going to take that personally?
You're asking me to get into the subconscious of Kenny Maurer, and I just won't do
I'm
that, Joe. I'm not a trained psychiatrist.
The question. I know you're going to deflect on it, and I don't want to put you in a tough spot, but you don't think that someone of this power and this prestige who has this much influence in the sport can go out, say this, make national headlines, and then three guys who have no prestige whatsoever, who are nothing but doormats in the eyes of many with their job every single night, might not sit in a room and go, you know what? Whether or not it was dirty, we should keep an eye on Pachulia tonight. That wouldn't just be one of their game notes. I'm not saying it's going to be a concerted effort to take a guy down, but Lo, didn't you used to talk to refs before games, after games? Isn't there a way to maybe massage a relationship just a little bit to possibly get some good favor? Not to fix a game, of course.
Watch any NBA game, watch any football game, watch any sporting event. You'll see Belichick, you'll see the coaches. They're ear hustling the officials saying, hey, watch this guy this way. Because coaches get scouting reports. You get a scouting report. You get a scouting report. You sit down with your prospective coach and they go over the scouting report, what this guy does, what the officials like to call. I mean, you heard we have Livingstone. He says the same thing. All sports, they don't change. There's nothing new under the sun. They are going to have scouting reports on the officials as well as the players. And yes, players and coaches do politicking to try to talk to the officials. Does it work? I don't know, but you got to try.
Has an official ever come up to you and given you a heads up on a hold because maybe you had a good relationship with him because you were a respectable guy who spoke with him and knew this man personally over the course of a 16-year career?
Yeah, I've had officials say, hey, Neil, you got to keep your hands in. I could have called that. Be careful with your hands. And I've seen him do that, and I've seen him do that to me, warn me on certain things. Like, hey, thanks. I owe you one. But absolutely, that those things happen. They can call penalties on any single play, but absolutely – officials said, hey, Neil, like watching you play. Hey, but that one's a little close. Make sure you release the player when you're blocking. So, yes, I've had that happen.
What to expect in game two tonight as well as game one tomorrow. Chris Broussard is up next. Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.